Hello and welcome to North Shore Today. I'm Rick Moore along with Bill Newell, and today we'll take a look at some stories from around the region on the North Shore, and then we'll also have an interview coming up with Steve Krause, the editor of the Daily Item. Nice weather day today, temperature not reaching the 50s, but clear skies, a little rain in the forecast for Thursday night and Friday going into our football weekend, but we'll have more on that in just a while. First of all, let me tell you that Gloucester Police Chief Leonard Campanello and John Rosenthal, co-founders of the Police Assisted Addiction and Recovery Initiative, also known as PARI, are pleased to announce that the Amity Circle Tree Ranch has joined the team of recovery centers assisting addicts. Now, this place is located in the Tank Verde Valley of Tucson, Arizona, or Tankay, I'm not sure how that's pronounced. But anyway, it's in Tucson, Arizona. Circle Tree Ranch is an affordable residential long-term recovery center suited for successful addiction rehabilitation and recovery. So another partnership with the Gloucester Angel Program, this time from Arizona. As the holiday season is approaching, Chief Warren Ryder of Boxborough would like to recommend, he's the Boxborough Police Department, I should say, would like to remind residents to be vigilant when ordering gifts online by following several easy steps to prevent doorstep theft. He suggests you never put yourself in a position where your gift orders are going to be at risk. FedEx and UPS, of course, offers services to customers, and to ensure packages are not stolen, consider requesting a signature on your deliveries, signing up for an email alert, choosing an alternative destination if you're not home, redirecting packages even if they're already on their way. Send them to your closest FedEx or UPS office or some other secure location. And set up a vacation hold if you'll be away during the holidays so gifts will not be delivered to an empty house. And if you arrive home to find packages that have been stolen, immediately notify the police. And also never accept a surprise package or gift where a payment is required. Additionally, do not give out any personal information when retrieving a delivery if you initiated the purchase. In Salem, for those wondering what to do with old trash barrels, recycling bins, and toters, which can no longer be used curbside in the city's new program, here are some green options. This is from the Salem city website. Repurpose, turn them into yard waste containers. Reuse, sell, or give away old containers using any number of free online websites or services. Recycle, drop them off at the Department of Public Services at 5 Jefferson Avenue during business hours in November, or North Shore Recycled Fibers at 53 Jefferson Avenue during business hours at any time. Swap, bring and drop off any one of these neighborhood locations during the week of November 21 to 22, the weekend rather. So that's this weekend coming up. You can drop these off at Salem Willows near the tennis courts, Collins Cove Park, the old tennis court, Transfer Station, Mansell Park, Forest River Park, and Mack Park. And it says, feel free to take any barrels, bins, or toters that you like. The remainder will be picked up and recycled by Waste Management. Any questions? Contact the Trash and Recycling Department at 978-619-5673. Excuse me. And finally, Congressman Seth Moulton and Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker are engaging in a war of words over the governor's assertion that he was not interested in accepting refugees from Syria in the wake of last Friday's terrorist attacks in Paris. This back and forth started Monday when Moulton tweeted that it is a shame that Governor Baker doesn't know the difference between refugees and those from whom they need refuge. Asked Tuesday about Moulton's comment, Baker, according to an audio transcript provided by his office, said, it's unfortunate a serious guy like that went straight to the partisan talking points. And to that, Moulton tweeted, my American values and Marine Corps experience are not partisan talking points. So I'm sure that'll be heating up in days to come. And still to come, we're going to be checking in with Bill Newell, who chats with Steve Krause.
We are joined by Steve Krause, the news editor of the Daily Item in Lynn. And Steve, welcome. Welcome back from what, just about a week off, right?
Yep, a week off. We loved every minute of it.
Even though I understand the weather wasn't the greatest and so on. But you're back at it. And since the time you left and came back, there was the story of the bombings in Paris, the terrorist attacks. All local newspapers kind of try to figure out that local angle. I was struck by the story that was in Tuesday's paper where you had a story from the folks at Flagship Travel where they're basically saying their data is showing that people are canceling trips to Paris, which would be air flights to Paris from this area, that they might have been going there for celebrations maybe during over the holidays in the weeks ahead.
Yeah, Paris is a pretty popular destination for holidays. Paris is Paris, you know, it's the city of lights and all that. And, yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with people who just decide after something like that that they don't want to go over there. You know, it takes a tremendous leap of faith, I would think, to go into the eye of the hurricane, you know, at least this go around anyway. But, you know, there's another side of it too, and that's that anytime something like this happens, and we just rearrange our lives to accommodate it, you know, that's the whole objective. You know, I have my own theory of what terrorism's all about and what its ultimate goal is, and I don't think it's really anybody cares. Like maybe you do. I don't know.
Steve, I care, Steve. Anything you have, I care, Steve.
Well, I think this is exactly what it aims to do. It aims to disrupt lives. I mean, it doesn't aim to win world domination or at least anytime soon, but it does aim to disrupt lives and to put the fear into people. And, you know, this sounds awfully trite, but I could walk out the door after I get done with this interview and walk across the street and get hit by a car. Probably a lot sooner than a terrorist attack. I mean, if you look at how often these things occur and what a wide palette they have to use, but I still go out and cross the street. So, I mean, you know.
So this is analyzing the world global terror threat compared to Monroe Street in Lynn. Is that what you're saying?
All right, I'll give you a perfect example. Not long after 9/11, I went to a Patriots game. 50,000 people in the stands. Because it was 9/11 and everything, the security was just off the wall. You know, big crowds, perfect target and everything like that, but I still went. I'm not telling these people not to go. I'm just saying that in the bigger picture, that that's what its aim is. Its aim is to just disrupt people from doing things that they would normally do and put the fear of being blown up, I guess, into everybody that goes anywhere. You know, one of the targets in that terrorist attack was a soccer stadium. Yeah. So what are we all supposed to now not go? So to soccer games or to football games or the World Series, I just think at some point you got to have to a little bit of defiance and just do these things. And I'm the perfect example of how guilty. I wouldn't get on a plane after 9/11 until I absolutely had to 7 years later to go to the Super Bowl in Arizona. And you can't walk to Arizona or drive to Arizona. So I had to get on a plane, and because I was dragged my feet so much about making reservations and everything, I ended up having to go from Boston to Georgia to Los Angeles to Arizona on connecting flights. So, I mean, I flew, when you say flying cross-country, man, I flew cross-country and up and down. But what it did do is it cured my fear of flying. I got there and got back, and nobody hijacked the plane, and you know, it's a totally random thing, and I just hate to see people give up what, in a lot of ways, could have been their trips of a lifetime, yeah. You know, just because of these people, and it's sad.
Well, again, it's an interesting data point that you guys had in that story on Tuesday, and that I know that tourism travel or traveling for pleasure is different than traveling for business, and I remember after 9/11, flying from Boston College, and we were flying somewhere not too long after 9/11. And, I'm running the math. I'm thinking, okay, this has happened. This happened a while ago. Now all of a sudden, I'm thinking in my head, look at all the successful flights that have taken off from all the airports around the country. I'm trying to do the math, not really doing the math, but I'm thinking there's hundreds and thousands of flights and, you know, that have been successful, that have gone up and have come down without incident, and you're just playing those numbers in your head as you're sitting waiting to board the plane.
Exactly. And, you know, it's the odds are astronomical. And that's easy to say until you are in the middle of it.
Yeah.
You know, the 1 year that I didn't go to the Boston Marathon out of the last 15 is the year that they bombed it.
Yeah.
And, okay, so what happens? The next year I went. You know, you have to ask yourself, how they're not going to do that twice. You know, they go to places where people just don't expect it to happen. And the only way I think you eradicate it is to outthink them. I don't think that you can. It's a war. I mean, I'm going way off the tangent here, and I apologize for this, but it's a war that is right now being fought on their terms and not ours. Mm-hmm. And the only way that we can, in the short run, combat this is to outthink them. I don't think, you know, bombing entire countries is the answer.
I know you had a story also in the Tuesday paper about the lockdowns in the schools, the security measures being taken, and I know that Lynn Public Schools has Bobby Ferrari, who's Lynn police officer, coordinating the security. And I know years ago he was way ahead of the curve, I think, in other districts and on safety measures and the lockdown procedures. And there was a story in the paper, as I mentioned, Tuesday with him and Deb Ruggiero from one of the elementary schools in Lynn. And I guess those are procedures that we're seeing, I think, just recently, within the last couple of weeks, Saugus went into a lockdown. They had an incident down in Cambridge on Monday as well. So there's little incidents where I'm telling you that the practicing those lockdown drills is critical for schools to try to get this right. And there's a lot of different philosophies on then what to do in these kinds of situations. But maybe just some thoughts on that story.
Well, I think anything that you do in terms of safety and security is obviously very necessary when you, you know, I think next to terrorism, the biggest issue that I think as far as safety and security in this country, school shootings. You know, it just seems to me we can't go far without it being an issue somewhere. And, you know, good Lord help us, you know, Massachusetts has been spared for the most, not for the whole part, but, you know, every time one of these things happens, you have to ask yourself, when's it going to happen here and where? You know, so I can remember last winter, there were threats made over the internet at both classical English and ultimately at tech. Same person made all the threats and was eventually apprehended, but it just shows you how real this issue is. And again, much like the terrorism, the only way that you can really ever fight it in the short term is to be prepared. You know, and to stay, if you can, a step ahead of the people who are trying to do these things. And one way is to have a protocol in place so that if it ever, God forbid, does happen, there's a plan.
Yeah. I know there are a couple of two different theories on how to handle those situations. And one is the practice that had been done for years is, you know, you lock down, shelter in place kind of a place where you go into your students, go into the classroom, become as invisible as possible in whatever physical surroundings they might have, a closet behind a wall, doors that lock, all these things away from windows, be as invisible as possible. But there's also other scenarios where you can't just have that happen, where there's that fight back scenario. And there's a lot of literature out and research on that piece and how the fight back literature or the non shelter in place, the non lockdown practice where people do actually flee from the building, do take, you know, kind of take charge of their own situation, how that kind of could play out in their favor as well. Cause I think it was the Virginia Tech shootings that highlighted that piece, that those people that kind of were proactive, got out of the building, were in a far better situation than those that stayed.
Well, I think it's probably a lot of it all depends on where the person is who's doing the shooting and, you know, what kind of an advantage that person has. I don't think that if you have a person that's standing at the front of a classroom full of kids that are trying to get out is going to help very much.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer. I mean, thank God I'm a newspaper editor and not a Lynn Police School resource officer or something like that where that's hanging over my head. But, you know, it's a sad commentary on the way we have to do things that this is even an issue.
Right. And you're right. Those are big decisions, big issues, big part of planning to try to bring people together to make those. Then they are making those kind of critical decisions. All right, let's just jump to a couple of things very quickly. There was also a story on the Saugus Lights. I guess Saugus football, I noticed they've been playing a lot of night games. It's one of those things where I'm looking at the games, I see the games listed, and I'm thinking night football Saugus. They don't have lights there, but they've been bringing in the portable lights. So
yeah, Saugus has done it. Swampscott's done it. Even my alma mater did it this year, the prep. You know, they had night game against Malden Catholic. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Personally, I'm a big fan of Saturday afternoon football in the fall, a nice crisp day, and you know. But when it gets to this time of the year, after they turn the clocks back, even if you have a 2 o'clock game and it lingers, you know, you're playing in darkness. So at that point, I suppose if you can get portable lights in and play at night and not have to deal with that gloaming, remember Homer in the gloaming, that situation that. It's a good thing. I also think it's very communal. I mean, I you know, we've both been to Newell Stadium, your stadium, on a Friday yeah. night in Gloucester, and the festival, it's like a carnival up there, you know. And the same thing is with Winthrop when they put lights in at Miller Field, and it can be like that at Manning Field, but I think smaller towns tend to coalesce more around the. The football team, Everett's a great example of that. You know, and if communities like Saugus and Swampscott, where there were just so many other things to do on a Saturday, you know, they've tried to put these games in on Saturday mornings, and that seems to work okay. But, you know, the more that they can make this a community event so that people come and watch, I think that's great. I'm all for it. I'm all for anything that gets the community involved and gives kids a chance to shine in front of the town.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think that there's any one way over the other way. I mean, Friday night, you know, probably works for a lot of people because they get out of work. They, you know, they can come to the game. They've already had their day of work, and they don't eat up another day. Saturday, I guess, eats into that. It's a day off for people, for some people. But you're right. I mean, like the history of going to the prep on a Saturday afternoon for football or Hurd Stadium in Beverly or Swampscott's Bloxwich Field on a fall afternoon is just, you know, it's a great take. You know what I mean? It's part of, I mean, you go back, let's just look at Swampscott, for example, Steve, and you think, well, this is the same field that all these other so-called Swampscott greats played on in a very similar situation. There were no lights then. They played on the same grass. I mean, things will change in Swampscott, I'm sure, in the years to come. But for right now, hey, as a traditionalist, it's kind of neat, I guess.
Although Dick Giron was once asked about that, you know, when there were proposals to replace Bloxwich Field and move it to another location. And, you know, his answer was that, you know, it's not the location, it's the history. The history endures. Wherever they decide to put the field, the history endures. I mean, I look at the city of Pittsburgh as a perfect example of that. You know, Forbes Field is no longer. Riverfront, or whatever, Three Rivers Stadium is no longer. But Roberto Clemente's legacy endures. So I don't know. I mean, there's both sides of that issue. I was all for tearing up Fenway Park and building a new one. That doesn't change the fact that Ted Williams played for the Red Sox. He's still going to have hit the same number of home runs. But I just, I love the small town aspect of high school sports. I really do. This isn't to say that I dislike Lynn. And it's a bigger city. It's got four schools competing with each other for the city's attention. But I love going to small towns, Danvers, having a great year. You know, I love doing that. And I love any time that I ever went to Gloucester, I loved to go once I found a place to park. You know, every time I've ever gone to one of those games, I just love the atmosphere. It's one of the reasons why I enjoyed what I did for as long as I did. You know, it was a great thing to be a part of. And I think that these new things that people are doing is also good. It's another thing to be a great part of.
Absolutely. And I'm not saying not to rebuild Bloxwich Field or any of those stadiums. That's up to the communities. That's great. But like, I'll just say one more thing. Like, I got a chance a number of years ago to go to Wrigley Field, And it's great. You go into the stadium and you just feel a part of history. Right. And the same thing many, many years ago, I was, as a kid, got to go to Crosley Field in Cincinnati. I think the third to last game they ever played there was in the middle of the summer. And, you know, saw Willie Mays play. I mean, those things those are memories that you got to have. I mean, that you won't forget in that context, you know. So having said that, that's all I'm saying. So let's go to one last story. We've got St. Mary's and Danvers and Essex Tech here on the North Shore all in postseason play moving forward.
And congratulations to all of them. I think this is Matt Durgan's chance to get to Super Bowl number 2 as a coach of St. Mary's. If they had a tough row to hoe playing against East Bridgewater, I think it is. East-West, you know. something Bridgewater. And, you know, this is a team that beat Cardinal Spelman. And I'm looking at this thing, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, if there's a team that's been Matt's nemesis as a St. Mary's coach, it's been Spelman. You know, I think he's beaten him once since he took over. And, you know, Spelman has ruined many good seasons for St. Mary. So, in a way, I looked at that and said, that's pretty good. Then I'm saying to myself, wait a minute, they beat Spelman. Bridgewater beat Spelman, East Bridgewater, so maybe it's not so good. But he was going to have to play somebody good to win, and I'm sure Matt understands that. And good luck to him, but I'm really happy for Danvers. I can't remember the last time Danvers was playing for a Super Bowl. I think it was one other time. They actually went and beat Gloucester on Thanksgiving, which happens rarely, I know. But and then they had that one game playoff on a Tuesday up at Endicott College.
Oh, yeah.
And they lost that. But this is, I mean, the coach has done a really good job up there, you know. And Karen Andreas' son is a quarterback. Karen, there's your shout out. Karen Andreas, she's the publisher for the Essex County newspapers, you know.
Yeah.
Her son is the quarterback, and they have this running back who ran for about 1,000 yards in their win over Marblehead last week. And good for them. Good for Danvers. I think it's a great thing for the, you know, I think if there's ever a community, particularly with this Chisholm trial going on, I think that if there's ever a community that needs something to be happy about and to just have a nice, pleasant diversion, it's this. So good luck to them.
Absolutely, and Sean Terrio's done a great job with that team and that defense, which is the story of the year as far as I'm concerned, the Danvers defense in high school football, mm-hmm. beating Tewksbury in that game a couple weeks ago by a point.
Tewksbury's owned that particular division since they started this format.
Yeah. All right, Steve, good talking with you. Best of luck. Great to have you back safe and sound from the state of Maine, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay. All right. Crossing multiple states to get back to work here this week. All right. That's Steve Krause, news editor of The Item here on MSONewsSports.com.
All right. Finally, don't forget, we've got football coming up this weekend. Last chance for one of our Northeastern Conference high school football teams to get to the Super Bowl. It's Danvers versus Melrose at Manning Field. Game time is 7 p.m., and we'll have our pregame either 6 o'clock, 6:30, somewhere in that vicinity, so be sure to listen to our radio channel A. There will not be any live streaming video of that game. MIAA rules won't allow for it. So we will have the audio of the game, however, on channel A, Friday night, Danvers versus Melrose. And before that on Friday, don't forget Trending Now with Josh Arnold at 10 a.m., heard most Fridays here on MSONewsSports.com. And for Bill and myself, I'd like to remind you that you can contact us with information, suggestions, complaints, whatever, at MSONewsSports@gmail.com. MSONewsSports@gmail.com. This is North Shore Today.